Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How did a border community like Laredo, Texas, come to define itself in part by hosting one of the oldest and largest annual celebrations of George Washington's birthday? Since 1898, the city's Society of Martha Washington has brought its wealthiest residents together each year for a pageant at which carefully selected debutantes dress up 18th century style and briefly take the personas of women like Martha Washington and Abigail Adams. Hand-sewn reproduction gowns can cost as much as $30,000 in a city where median household income is only about $36,000. And the ball itself is a centerpiece of a month-long festival that achieves a curious balance of reverence for colonial-era notables and expression of pride in Mexican-American heritage. Filmmaker Cristina Ibarra explores the ball and its significance to 21st-century participants in her new independent lens documentary, Las Marthas. You can see it next Tuesday, February 18th, on KERA Channel 13 television. Cristina, welcome to Think.
It's great to be here.
This is such a remarkable tradition. How did it come to your attention?
I'm from a different border town called El Paso, Texas. And I have always been interested in border stories. Ever since I can remember, I always wanted to leave the border because I would always see it perceived in the media, in the news stories, in these really urgent ways. Very important social issues were happening, like immigration and the drug war violence. And I was always, you know, interested in maybe thinking about other things, or, you know, I was interested in just kind of leaving that space, right? And when my cousin married and moved to Laredo, Texas, I went to go visit her. And I noticed that on the covers of many of the local magazines, there were these young women. And they all reminded me of Marie Antoinette. But it was almost like this kind of this Latina version of Marie Antoinette. And when I started to ask who these women were, I realized that many people in the town knew all of the girls' names. They knew the families. They knew who their parents were, their grandparents. And I found that extraordinary, that family legacy was so popular. And I came to realize that, you know, they were part of this larger ritual. They were debutantes in this celebration to George Washington. And specifically, they were debutantes in the Society of Martha Washington's colonial pageant and ball. And they were all pretending to be, or taking on this role as, you know, American revolutionaries. So the narrative of the ball is that Martha Washington is hosting a ball for her husband, George Washington. And so these debutantes are all invited guests of Martha Washington. And so I was found it curious because I was thinking to myself, how can we be in this region that used to be Mexican territory? And, you know, now here we are today celebrating George Washington, who is a symbol of, you know, the country that took over these lands. I found it ironic, and I was curious as to why and what the role of these young debutantes was in this larger celebration.
Well, as it comes up in the film, there are many families who have been there for generation after generation, and they never moved, but the border has moved multiple times.
Yeah, Laurita, one of our debutantes in the film, says a quote that's really quite popular in along the border. She says, you know, we didn't cross the border. The border crossed us. And so, this is an example of what happens after the United States takes over. So this is part of the story of what happens after that, the border crossed us.
So for people listening who have not been to Laredo or Nuevo Laredo, south of the border, can you tell us a little bit about those communities and about, I am also from El Paso, by the way, but about what it's life like along the border and how life sort of does cross back and forth so often?
Sure, yeah. Life on the border is almost like living in a third space. It's not really completely Mexican, and it's not completely American. You do have this line. You do have this physical border that marks two different countries, but the families are really split by it. And you have this kind of lifestyle that has been threatened recently, you know, with a wall and a lot of the violence that we hear about. But there's this urge to kind of keep these families together, especially in Laredo, a lot of these older families that have been split apart ever since the U.S.-Mexico war. There's always been this connection and this urge to live in both places simultaneously, if not literally, then metaphorically. You know, you're always celebrating in a very bicultural style.
So what exactly is the Society of Martha Washington, and how did it come to play such a significant role in the identity of this border community?
The Society of Martha Washington is one of the organizations that belongs to the larger umbrella organization of the Washington's Birthday Celebration Association. And the Washington's Birthday Celebration Association actually began pretty soon after the first celebration to George Washington in Laredo, Texas. The first celebration was introduced by a fraternity, of Anglo immigrants mostly, who came to the region. And they were called the Improved Order of the Red Men. This fraternity has its roots back in the East Coast. And there's a San Antonio chapter that made its way to Laredo. Part of the way that they celebrate their Americanness is by playing roles. And these they basically pretend, or they're inspired by Native culture. And so they take on these roles as they move up the ladder of the leadership ladder in the fraternity. And so the introduction to this, the introduction of the celebration to this festival has always had this kind of role-playing aspect to it. But it was started by a fraternity of men. Eventually, it was too large for the fraternity to handle, so a larger Washington's Birthday celebration was created. And the Society of Martha Washington is one of those under this umbrella. And it's a women's organization. It's one of the few it's almost like a response to the fraternity. This is fully controlled by women, and there's this role playing aspect that lives on within the society. So in this case, the role playing has shifted. When the role playing was first introduced, it was mostly these Anglo immigrants pretending to be Indian, pretending to be Mexican, and now there are these role-playing where these debutantes are pretending to be American revolutionaries.
And there is a little bit of room for, like, anachronism, and there are people portraying individuals at this ball who might never have met the Washingtons in person, that sort of thing.
That's true. That's what's curious. Again, going back to the first celebration, after this mock battle, this imaginary battle between Mexicans and Indians, the key to the city is earned by Pocahontas. And she then hands the key to the city over to George Washington. Of course, these two never met in real life. I mean, they're completely different time periods. But we're in this imaginary space, and, you know, it's an invented tradition. And basically, the spirit of that has been alive every year, where now you also have a very popular abrazo ceremony that's one of the events of the entire celebration. And you have the father of Mexican democracy, Miguel Hidalgo, meeting George Washington, the father of American democracy, right on top of the International Bridge. And they have a friendship hug to symbolize the interconnection between the two countries. Of course, these folks never met. So there's this anachronistic type of layering of history that happens throughout the celebration that's quite fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you get the sense that it really does have a profound meaning for people, or that it's just an excuse to have a good party, which is not necessarily a bad thing?
You know, that's a good question. I feel like I did kind of understand by the end why this is so important. I mean, I think it is not to be taken in a frivolous nature in many ways. The George Washington celebration from the outside looks like this assimilationist ritual. But if you really look at what's being celebrated or how they're celebrating it, it's a reflection of Mexican self-empowerment, because you do have this legacy that's very important to the families that's being displayed. You know, a lot of these debutantes, I'm speaking specifically about, in this case, about the debutante ball, because there are many other events, but in this case, this debutante ball, which is, you know, the most talked about event of the entire month, what the roles that the girls are playing are announced, but also their family lineage. So you do get to learn, you know, who the society is through these family lineages that are being announced. And you start to learn that a lot of these families have strong ties to, or they are actually the actual landowners of the town, the people who founded and settled Laredo originally. And there's this mixing happening with the Anglos that introduced the celebration, but there's this very strong connection to the roots of the town, which is very Mexican. And so what I see now in all these other events that have popped up as well, like the jalapeño eating contest, the Señor Internacional, the abrazo ceremony, is that in some ways it's actually a way of celebrating biculturalism, mm-hmm. and this way of living with multiple identities at the same time. That kind of can tell us a little bit about how to be American today. I mean, do we really need to choose a culture over another? I mean, can we live with all of our different identities at the same time? So I do think it has a very strong meaning for a lot of families. It's also the time of year that families come together from out of town, not just from Nuevo Laredo and Laredo, but families that have maybe left to Chicago or further into the United States. It's almost like a 4th of July for mm-hmm. them. It's like this coming together of family and friends that's really special and holds a lot of memories beyond just the historical tradition and the legacy of these, you know, Mexican landowners.
Well, you know, the film really made me think a lot about the fact that border people are uniquely comfortable with what you call that dual identity or multiple identity. There may be the sense that you have one foot more firmly planted in one culture than the other, but that doesn't mean that you have to get rid of the other one. It seems easier on the border than anywhere else in the country to live comfortably with both.
Yeah, it's an amalgamation of cultures. And so it's a very syncretic celebration in that way. You know, it's from the outside, it might seem like they're opposing each other, but if you really look at it, you know, it's they're living together. I think that would be a fair reflection.
We should say the ball itself is essentially reserved for the very wealthiest citizens of Laredo.
What is a fact is that you have to be invited to be a debutante, and. You know, the debutantes then will have a way of inviting their friends and family to their particular tables. I believe that you can try to buy a ticket if you want to spend. I believe the price might have shifted, but at one point it was $50 mm-hmm. for a ticket. So, you know, but not everyone really is interested in spending $50 on this kind of guy. So in some ways it is, and the effect of that is that it's reserved for people who are friends and family members of the debutantes who, you know, happen to be part of the elite.
My guest is filmmaker Cristina Ibarra. Her independent lens documentary, Las Marthas, airs next Tuesday, February 18th on KERA Channel 13 Television. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think, or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this summer and fall to design your own master's degree in an area that matters most to you, the arts, human rights, creative writing. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The new Independent Lens documentary, Las Marthas, airs next Tuesday, February 18th on KERA Channel 13 Television. We're speaking this hour with director Cristina Ibarra about the film. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Cristina, before the break, you told us that the young women who will debut at this pageant or ball have to be invited. Certainly, it's considered a great honor. At the same time, it turns out to be quite a responsibility. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the invitations go out to daughters of society members. So they do have a responsibility there. It's something that they've been, these young girls have known about since they were little girls. And they've been, in one way, preparing for them all their lives. I mean, I had one debutante talk to me about how she would go to the parade every year with her grandmother, and they would look at the girls on the floats in their gowns, and the grandmother would point and say, "That's going to be you one day." And so there was this sense, this inevitability about it. So when the invitations do go out, you know, the girls, they understand that this is a year of preparation they're about to embark upon. So not only do they have it, they're always high school seniors. So they not only have all of their college applications to fill out, but they also have a lot of these events that teach them about the social codes, you know, to kind of attend every weekend. They'll have their practices, their choreography sessions, their dress fittings. They're taught how to respond to, you know, to invitations. I mean, they're just basically taught to maneuver in this world as women. So they really enter in as girls, and by the time they leave, they're very polished, and they know how to speak to the media. They know how to speak to elders. I mean, it's that they come out as young women.
Of course, the debut today doesn't mean what it meant in 1898. The parents are not necessarily announcing that their daughters are eligible for marriage at 17 or 18.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the times have changed. I mean, it was introduced as a way to maybe form marriages. I mean, the dressmaker that we follow, the designer in the documentary, she married her escort, and her sister debuted and married her escort. So she jokes that some people call it a mating game, but that it really isn't. And I think that today, with all of the ways that the roles of women have been shifting, it's definitely something different. What's true about it today is that these young mostly Latina girls end up becoming these celebrities for the town. So it is an opportunity that's very rare along the border and in the entire United States for a young Latina woman to kind of empower herself in a way that's positive and that's, you know, kind of showing the entire town like what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. So it is a responsibility where these young girls are in one way representing their family lineage. So it becomes this very important part of their coming out, you know, is the entire process.
I'll confess I had mixed feelings about the process watching this, because I completely understood the importance of family tradition and this sense that you do represent your family and this sense of, I guess, empowerment, or, you know, you earn the respect of your friends and neighbors. On the other hand, you know, when they're parading in these gowns, which are astonishing, and we'll talk about those in a minute, they are a little bit like living mannequins, aren't they? I mean, they have to walk the way they're told to walk and smile a certain way and bow at a certain speed, which doesn't necessarily say the most important thing about you is your brain.
It's true. But, you know, this is also one part. I follow the girls for this coming out event. There are other ways that the society is helping out the community. I mean, there are scholarships that are the society raises money for. But in terms of the girls themselves, I mean, I guess one thing that my producing partner Aaron and I were talking about earlier Aaron likes to talk about Gloria Steinem mm-hmm. when Gloria Steinem was talking about beauty pageants, and she was saying, you know, we shouldn't really blame the young girl who is out there trying to get what she can and empower herself in the only way that she knows how. Instead, we need to change the culture, not blame the people who are playing the only game that exists. Mm. So I do like that, because I think it's a reminder that, you know, there are still roles that we're challenged with, and you know these are young girls trying to find their way, and they do have to kind of suffer through this the fitting into the gown and all of these ideas about femininity. So it is a complicated pageant. The idea of pageants themselves are quite complicated, and I'm not sure really the film really comes down on either side of the argument, because mm-hmm. both sides of the argument are fair. Like, we shouldn't really subject young women to this ritual, and you know, maybe this pageant might be a way for these young women to get ahead and maybe earn the money to advance themselves in other scholarly ways.
Well, and I think those points are made really well by the two women that you focus specifically on. There's Rosario from Nuevo Laredo, and then there is Laurita, who is from Laredo herself.
That's right. Yeah, they're from two different. Rosario is representing Nuevo Laredo, and she actually ended up moving to Laredo later on in her life. So she's been to school on both sides of the border. Mm-hmm. But she does represent Nuevo Laredo. There's always one representative, at least, from Nuevo Laredo at this pageant. And Rosario is that representative. And then we have Laurita, who she's the 13th family member to debut. Mm. So she comes from a long line of debutantes.
And let's talk about these gowns, because they are really spectacular. And there's one woman in town who has sort of made it her life's work to create these really amazing things.
Linda Lyon-Decker Gutierrez is one of the dressmakers who creates these gowns every year. And I guess it's arguable, but I would say she's one of the most important because she's... She has such a long legacy. Her family founded the society, and some of her family also founded the celebration itself. So she does have this knowledge to carry on, and she does teach these young women about their own family legacies, about how to maneuver in the world, and her work is outstanding. I mean, it's spectacular. She's an artist, and it's her gowns were so captivating. They really became this driving force as we were making the film, and became kind of objects themselves that kind of reminded us each time that she would layer all of these fabrics to create one of these really heavy gowns. We were seeing these layers come together, and we were reminded of the layering of the identities of the debutantes themselves. And we thought, this is exciting as a filmmaker to kind of have this kind of driving principle and think about this layering of history and legacy and this contemporary life, you know, that the debutantes are experiencing.
If you want to carry the metaphor even further, there's a great weight to these gowns. Some of them weigh, am I right, 100 pounds?
According to Linda, they can weigh up to 100 pounds. And so, yes, these girls are quite literally carrying their legacy on their young shoulders.
And what do they look like? I mean, hopefully people will watch the film and really be able to just glory in these beautiful dresses. But can you describe some of the ones that were most striking to you?
Yes. So we follow the creation of Rosario's gown, and it's very meticulous. I mean, there are so many layers. You have the petticoat, you have an undercoat, and you have all of these fabrics. And on top of that, you have this beading, this hand beading, and these stones that sparkle on stage. But it's quite heavy. After talking to Laurita, I was realizing that the dresses actually are in a way bruising the girls because of their weight. I imagine some girls might weigh the same as the dress itself, and so their skin tears at their shoulders. They have to wear padding to protect their waist, and their knees and their waists get bruised. I mean, it's a real effort. I mean, this seems like a sport in a way, you know.
Are they all happy to be there? Because, you know, teenagers can really relish in tradition and find meaning in it. And sometimes they, you know, the last thing they want to do is exactly what their mother and grandmother did before them.
You know, Laurita, one of the debutantes we follow, she has mixed feelings about it. And it's interesting because she wants to, tradition is very important to her. But she also struggles because she wants to be her own woman. Mm-hmm. She believes in it being an independent woman. And she's trying to figure out how to use this in a way that doesn't hamper her spirit and where she can still kind of claim her sense of individuality. And I'm sure that might be the case for other debutantes. I feel like, you know, in any kind of ritual like this, there's always this struggle between the individual need and then the larger community need. So, you know, I see the girls enjoying themselves as much as they can, but they're told what to do.
And all the gowns, I suppose, have to be handmade, right? And the cost is pretty extraordinary.
So we found that there were a couple of different ways to get your gown made. There's a legacy gown, which is a gown that you inherit from someone in your family. Someone who's debuted before. There was one debutante who was part of a family she was the fifth daughter, immediate daughter of her, to debut. So her four other sisters wore the same dress that she was wearing, and so I would see Linda, the dress designer, adjusting the dress, updating it, kind of changing the gown to make it feel more like the young girl's personality who was wearing it that year. So that's definitely one way to go. And then you have the gowns that are just created from scratch. And those gowns can be very costly. And they, you know, the fabrics can be quite expensive. Linda grabs her fabrics from Europe, from New York. I mean, she's very meticulous about her work. And so, you know, in asking Linda how much her dresses cost, she won't give me a straight answer. she believes that she can make a gown for any girl with any budget. And, you know, she just works her magic at whatever cost. So she wouldn't give me her own quotes. But in talking to the scholars, one of the scholars in the film, her mother is a seamstress and a lot of her cousins have debuted. And she was letting us know that the average gown can cost between $15,000 to $30,000. So we're talking about the wealthy elite of Laredo, because the median income, you know, of Laredo is around that same price. You know, it's, you were saying, I believe it was like 36,000. I think when we were making the documentary, it was about 40,000. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, they can be quite costly.
Is anybody questioning this? I mean, wealthy people can do what they want with their money, and their chances are they're not trading a college education for a gown. But are there people who say this is not the best way to invest?
You know, there are. There's definitely that argument. And in some, I can understand it. But also in some ways, I think that it's in some ways maybe unfair, because what people are spending their money on is what they're valuing. Mm-hmm. And so I guess in this case, you know, they're not sacrificing to pay the rent or to, you know, to get by. So it's just part of the family tradition to have this cost. It's something that they've been planning for, and you know, it is criticized, but at the same time, I mean, the society is aware and they do try to hold fundraisers for charities and for scholarships. And so that's how they try to move around in the world. But they're not going to, you know, stop spending money on things that they value. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure that we should ask them to. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are these symbolic cultural representations. So, I mean, we're not questioning why we build stadiums or why we're building lowriders. I mean, it's just about what we value. It's definitely a controversial point. But I think there are more interesting aspects to or dimensions to the celebration than the prize. I mean, that's kind of obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. You know, we've talked on this show before about like the quinceañera tradition and how expensive that can get. And it is sort of difficult to put a dollar value on the symbolism and what it means to a young woman and to her family. And sometimes it's hard to just say you should have spent it on this and not that because it is something that means a great deal.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's hard to put a price tag on tradition. That's good. Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I feel like a lot of the women who participate in this event would definitely agree. And they are sensitive to it.
We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Cristina Ibarra. Her independent lens documentary, Las Marthas, airs next Tuesday, February 18th on KERA Channel 13 Television. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can send email to think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this summer and fall to design your own master's degree in an area that matters most to you, the arts, human rights, creative writing. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Cristina Ibarra. She's the filmmaker who directed the new independent lens documentary Las Marthas, which airs Tuesday, February 18th on KERA Channel 13 Television. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org, which is where we hear from Audra, who asks if you would comment on the lineage of the debutantes in terms of whiteness or skin color. She goes on to say Latin America has a deep history of privileging European over Native or African lineage, despite sharing cultural traditions such as language. I wonder if this is also reflected in the Laredo debutante culture.
Hi. Yeah, you know, it's a really wonderful point because as one of the scholars in the documentary notices, is that a lot of the debutantes, they do look white. And that's because most of them do come from this European background. I mean, they are descendants of the Spanish colonizers who founded the town, and so you do see that this is displayed on stage as well.
And is that a factor simply of the fact that it was European immigrants who started this and therefore who have this family legacy? Or is there, did you sense that there was a preference in choosing young women for those who appear to be fairer skinned?
What happens is that the invitations go out to daughters of society members. So really, the makeup of the society is what we see as the makeup of the debutantes. These are all the daughters, the granddaughters or nieces of the society members. So we then have to ask ourselves, who are the society members? And if we look at who they are, I mean, they are either related to the original landowners of Laredo or to the Anglo immigrants that introduced the event, for the most part. I mean, there are no absolutes, but this is what we see reflected. It's mostly because of the closed nature of the society.
What did you hear from now adult women looking back on their own time as Marthas?
We see a couple of the scholars in the film reminisce about their time. They were not debutantes, but, you know, they explain, you know, how when you are going through this, when their friends are going through it, that they felt like it was a marker, mm-hmm. and a sort of display of difference. And I feel like, you know, in talking to the debutantes that we do follow in the film today, after the filmmaking process, you have Laurita explain, you know, we've all been teenagers, she'll say. we all know what it's like to have these kinds of, you know, things that we care about that are deeply important to us. But then later, maybe we realize maybe they aren't so important. You know, I feel like in speaking to informally to some of the debutantes I've gone through it, you know, they have some similar feelings about it. Although there's still this fondness and this love for the fact that it even exists and that they were a part of it. It's a complicated memory.
Mm-hmm. Is Laredo a town where people sort of go off to be educated and return, or are they sort of struggling with brain drain?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer it. I mean, what I can tell you is that the scholars that we follow in the film have not returned. And one of the scholars, Dr. Norma Cantu, tried to go back, and she was there for a while. But, you know, she then was called away for opportunities, you know, that were going to further her career outside of Laredo. And so informally, what I see as a filmmaker, not as an anthropologist, is that I do see that people do leave. They study and then they come back. But if they come back, they're highly invested in the workings of how this plays out, how this power dynamic plays out. If they don't come back, I think that it's because they have these opportunities that they really can't explore in the town, and they're still fond of the town, but they're not really going back to work. They go back to visit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I about the brain drain question, I guess that's a good question. I'm curious to hear statistics. I don't have them, unfortunately.
What is it like on the ground for people who are not part of the ball itself, but maybe attend the abrazo ceremony, or they're at the parade, or they're sort of camping out to see the debutantes walking into the ballroom?
Yeah, so we spoke with one particular woman who was saving her spot on the street the day before the parade, and she explained that families start to line up approximately 11 a.m. the day before the parade to save their spot. And she was there because her family was arriving from out of town from all sorts of places, and they always have had that one spot. So she was there to take care that they always had their traditional spot there. People do line up, and they do care about it. They want to see the debutantes that that are portrayed in their pageants. They want to see them up on their floats. You do have the Carnaval and the Noche Mexicana and all of these other events where it's where all of the kind of classes intermingle. Everyone attends, the more closed events are on display for this one parade. And so you'll have all sorts of feelings. I mean, you have feelings of people who just are there to adore these gowns that are lovely, and the girls, and you have fans and supporters of the young women. You have young girls who would love to one day be a debutante. You have some people who might be antagonistic towards them and are there to celebrate other aspects of the parade. I mean, it's a mix, but But what I can tell is that it is it's a loved event in all of its complications. So you might have this antagonism in the same way that you would have antagonism in other debutante celebrations in the East Coast or in Paris or, you know, in other places. In this case, it just happens to be that they're usually Latinas.
So tell us a little bit about the realities of following around two teenagers for, I guess, weeks, at least weeks on end, right, to get to know them, to sort of know their stories.
Yeah, so I went to Laredo for about 4 months, 4 or 5 months, and I followed them. And, I mean, the one thing that was very clear is, I mean, they're so difficult to keep track of. They're so busy. I mean, this is the probably the busiest times of their lives. I mean, they're applying to college. They're trying to keep up with their extracurricular activities. They have their final exams, and they have all these different parties to attend to for various reasons and, you know, sponsored events where they're expected to attend, and they're expected to, you know, take photographs and expected to talk to the media. And so, yeah, following them was a challenge just logistically and trying to understand where they were, what were they doing that day. But, you know, also what was really important was to be able to talk to them behind the scenes, behind mm-hmm. all of this kind of frenzy and activity, and really get them to be themselves in a more intimate setting. And so I was just about finding the right space and the right time to be able to kind of relax with them and just hang out in their bedrooms or, you know, be with their families at dinner and just kind of, you know, be with them as who they were. So it was a challenge to kind of carve out that space amongst all of their multiple activities.
Did you settle on your two sort of main characters before you started, or did you follow a number of girls and then decide these were the two arcs that you wanted to really include in the film?
So I actually shot a couple of balls before this last one that ended up being the predominant ball in the film. Mm-hmm. And there were debutantes that I loved, and there was one particular debutante, Daniela de Peña, who I was hoping to include in the film, and I just couldn't because the way the funding cycle works for a documentary wasn't lining up exactly with my efforts. And so, you know, I was only able to shoot for 1 week with mm-hmm. Daniela in 2009. And then in 2010, I was able to shoot for 2 weeks. And finally, when my producing partner, Aaron, came on board, we were able to together raise the finishing funds. And I was able to really be there for the 4 or 5 months it took to spend time with them. So that's how I ended up finding the two young women that we end up following is just because I was able to spend the time in town, but also because they were the ones who took the challenge of being themselves in a situation where they're under pressure to be this very polished young lady. So you have to present yourself in a certain way, but here's someone asking you to not present yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so they took the challenge, and that's basically I like to say that they chose us in a way.
Well, Larita is very interesting because she doesn't seem to be worried about saying everything she's supposed to say necessarily about all these events. She's honest and she's respectful, but she also, you don't get the sense that she's sort of watching herself.
That's what I love about her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do in this situation, but she does it, and it's important to her to be herself. And I think ultimately it pays off in her personal life too, because she was able to translate that into her personal essays that she was writing for scholarships, and she was able to win the Gates Millennium Scholarship for her pre-med education. And, I mean, it's because of her strength as an independent woman.
And Rosario is, she is careful. And in some ways, it's almost like her classmates doubt that she can be that good. But she, like, when you ask her who she admires, she says Mother Teresa. And she seems to really mean it. She's not just saying this.
No, she's a devout Catholic. And this is where she looks for her role models. Mm-hmm. And her mother teaches her Catholic lessons, and you know, no, she's very earnest. She wears her heart on her sleeve, and you know, she's just very a good-natured, sweet woman.
We have an email here from Marianne Godinez, who says, I was a Martha's debutante for the year 2005-2006. Just wanted to say I had an amazing experience. My older sister was a deb, as was my younger sister. We all just loved it, and we were so grateful to be part of it. It definitely brought our family much closer, especially since for the November presentation, my father and I had Sunday dress practices every Sunday until the big November presentation, and it was nice to have that father-daughter time. Thank you so much for writing.
Yeah.
Do people record all this? Like, do you come away from this with, like, a big album of photographs of yourself in a gorgeous dress? And what kind of mementos do they keep other than the dresses themselves?
Yes, they do take plenty of photographs. I mean, they do have these professional photographers at a lot of their events where, you know, they're staged photographs. But then there's also, you know, family members who take their personal cameras. I mean, most of what you're taking away as a young woman, I mean, not mostly, I couldn't say that, but what you do end up with is a stack of photographs, mm-hmm. a series of professional photographs and family snapshots as you're having these bonding moments that the debutante Gloria Molina just explained, you know, these bonding moments with your family, with your father. I mean, you do have this scrapbook, you know, at the end. It's actually reminding me of one of the society program bills from their 25th anniversary. They talk about memories, and they say, you know, if we could just select our memories, we could string them and wear them as amulets against the pressures of the present and the uncertainties of the future.
Oh, wow.
So these photographs are taking remembrances that are looking at these girls as the amulets.
Did you find yourself at all wishing that you could try on one of these dresses and have a few pictures taken or see yourself in a mirror, see what it felt like to wear this thing?
You know, I did not. When I saw what it took to get into one of those gowns, they're beautiful gowns, and I'm captivated by them. But in terms of wanting to get into one, I reserve that for young women who have the stamina.
And we should say, to conclude, it doesn't look like this tradition is going anywhere. It's alive and well.
Yeah, it's alive and well. Just like the society quote explains, it's like, you know, this is going to protect us against any of the pressures, any of the pressures of the outside world. We're going to keep having the celebration.
The new Independent Lens documentary directed by Cristina Ibarra is called Las Marthas. You can see it next Tuesday, February 18th on KERA Channel 13 television. Cristina, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.